Sometimes it feels like the news is full of things that have never happened before. And that is not exactly true. In fact, it may have happened this very week, hundreds or thousands of years ago. I'm Sally Helm, host of the podcast History This Week from the History Channel. Trade embargoes? Thomas Jefferson tried them. Rent too high? We've been arguing about that for a while. Each episode is proof. The past isn't that far away. Listen to History This Week, available now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's Dan Menigan. I'm Jeff Phelps. Browns on the practice field today. Oh, boy. You want a good preview of what's coming up here? I'd suggest you go to Cleveland.com and read right now. Shedeur Sanders versus Deshaun Watson, Myles Garrett's chances of showing up, and other things to watch in Browns voluntary minicamp. It was written by the lady who joins us right now on the Make It Right Call, Kyle Wright Hotline. She is Mary Kay Cabot. Hi, Mary Kay.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Not as well as you. I loved your preview, and I loved the first line. Who will go first?
Well, I think that's what everyone kind of wants to know.
Yeah.
I think all eyes will be trained on those quarterbacks. We want to catch clues for what the depth chart looks like, what Todd Monken has been thinking, how these guys have been performing, and above all, what do they actually look like?
So, Mary Kay, on the draft side of things, of course, that's going to be the other part of this. While, of course, the Browns will be on the field. Do you see, it seems like we might be in the midst of silly season because I'm seeing a lot of defensive ends possibly going to the Browns. Do you see that as even being on the table for this team?
Well, I've been writing for a long time that, yes, a defensive player is on the table for this team, 100%. We know that Andrew Berry loves defensive players. We know that he loves to stock that defense and keep things going strong. So that wouldn't shock me at all. He has been trying to tell everybody for years and years and years that he doesn't draft for need, that he goes into every single draft believing that he is stocking an expansion team. So that wouldn't surprise me at all.
With that thought in mind, the idea of a trade down and accumulating more draft picks appeals to me, Mary Kay, because everybody says top five, six guys in this draft are primo talents. And after that, you've got a bunch of the guys in kind of a same type of space. And if you could load up on a bunch of those guys, I get it. But is that worth passing up maybe a guy who could be a big-time player for a decade or so? In other words, one of the top six guys in this draft, top five guys after Fernando Mendoza.
Well, it depends. Each team has these guys evaluated differently, and we don't know exactly how the Browns are viewing the top six, seven players in this draft. If they have different grades on them or higher grades on them than some of these other teams do, then they'll stay there and pick at number six if they see someone there that can make an impact for them right away and for the foreseeable future. But if they don't see that, if they see a range of guys, five or six guys or seven guys or whatever, that they feel are sort of in the same boat there, then I do think that they'll try to trade back depending on what they can get in return and pick up, hopefully for them, a more premium pick for next year's draft.
Mary Kay Cabot of Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer joining us on the Make It Right Call, Kyle Wright Hotline. What would be a dream scenario for the Cleveland Browns with that first pick, Mary Kay?
Well, I would say probably trading back into a space where you can still get exactly what you want, or one of the four players or five players that you still want there that you had equally rated, and then picking up at least another second round pick next year that you can perhaps package in a trade up to get the quarterback that you want in the event that you need him. I think that that would be probably the way to go. And then if you do that when you trade back, then you perhaps can still get maybe the tackle that you want there. Then maybe you come back at number 24. Maybe you mess with that pick a little bit. But maybe you stay right there at number 24 and you can get a receiver that you really like there. And not because you absolutely need one, but because the strengths of this class match what your needs are. Not because he's going to start drafting for need at 24. That's still too high to do that. But because there are going to be plenty of good receivers still left at that spot. So I would say that that would be a home run for them in round one.
Mary Kay, we know the team is looking at an offensive lineman. That's been, everybody says that, everybody knows that. But with that said, so many people are still hanging on to the idea that, boy, they have to redo their offensive line. They already did that. for the most part, in free agency, did they not? Dan and I are going to discuss this later. How do you see that playing out? Because right now you got to think it's DeWand and Zion Johnson on the left side, Elgton Jenkins at center, Tevin Jenkins at right guard, and Titus Howard at right tackle. So where would a new guy fit?
Well, I think you would probably want a tackle that could replace either DeJuan Jones in the event that you needed him to, in the event that he wasn't going to stay healthy or didn't nail down that left tackle job, or to play on the right side in case you can move Titus over to the left. So I do think that they probably would do well to end up with a tackle out of this draft, but also a center. You don't realize how important center is until you don't have one. So if I were them, I would be seeking a center somewhere in this draft. And sometimes you have to take those guys pretty high. So I think we can all expect that Andrew Berry will surprise us somewhere along the line, like he did last year with Carson Schlesinger. He doesn't go according to Hoyle all the time. And after he explains it, it usually makes more sense.
Mary Kay, Luke Whipler hurt, but all accounts, he's going to be okay to get going. They obviously drafted him late, but they drafted Zach Zinter in the third round. Why is it that he's an afterthought in everybody's thought? And do you think he could actually compete to the point where he becomes a starter on this offensive line this year?
Well, I think he has a chance, and I think the Browns would love it if that happened. So I do think you will see him competing for a starting job at one of the guard spots, and he's got to show what he's got. He's got to show what he can do. So this is his opportunity. If he was ever going to seize the moment, now is it. And so I do think that you will see the best of what he has to offer during the next few months.
Mary Kay joining us on the Make It Right Call, Kyle Wright Hotline. What can be, give us a couple of people, I should word it this way, who have something to gain over this voluntary OTA period that we're in the midst of?
Well, I think Dylan Gabriel is certainly one of them. We have all kind of written Dylan Gabriel off. We are going to get a chance to hear from Shador and Dylan today. I think that's exciting. I can't wait to hear what these guys have to say. But I'm guessing that Dylan, well, he will be asked. I don't know how he'll address it, but he will be asked about sort of being overlooked in the quarterback competition. And when I look at this QB competition now, I'm starting to think that he's going to raise his hand and say, hey, don't forget about me. And the reason why I say that is because he is so smart and he's such a quick processor that I think he's going to be able to play fast and look good in this new offense. Sometimes the great equalizer for quarterbacks is knowing the system and knowing the scheme. And whichever one of these guys can really assimilate this offense and put onto the grass what they have learned in the classroom, that guy is going to have a chance to shine in this competition. So I think he's going to make it a game. Don't rule him out, and he's somebody I would keep my eye on.
Mary Kay, Todd Monken has talked about mobility at quarterback and how he wants that. Is Shador mobile enough to give Todd Monken what he wants at that position?
Yes, and I've asked that question over and over and over again this whole entire offseason. And I think most people believe that Shador displayed more mobility and off-schedule playmaking ability last year than they thought he would. I don't know if anybody would really admit that, but that really seems to be the case, that he was much better at the off-schedule play and making something happen and creating than some people thought he would be. So I think all of them have the requisite mobility to run Todd Monken's scheme. What will be interesting is to see how agile, how mobile does Deshaun Watson look coming off of not one but two Achilles surgeries?
That is a good question. I can't wait to see that, Mary Kay, because if he looks good, I would think Todd Monken might be salivating.
Well, we just don't know yet. We don't know what they are thinking about any of these quarterbacks yet and who's going to rise to the occasion. And then here's going to be the tricky and tough part, because it doesn't matter what you look like in 7-on-7s, and it really doesn't matter what you look like in 11-on-11s in shorts with no pressure and no game planning for you. What matters is how you perform during a live football game when a defensive coordinator has schemed all week to take away your strengths. So even if somebody looks amazing in practice, it still doesn't mean that the season is going to work out quite like that. So I think it's going to be a little bit of an evolution as we proceed through the season.
It is very well known and well stated that Myles Garrett is not here for any of this stuff on a scale of 1 to 10.
So we've heard, huh?
1 being the worst, 10 being absolute freak out. On the Mary Kay Cabot scale, how much should fans care about the fact that Myles Garrett is not at these voluntary workouts?
Well, it didn't prevent him from earning two NFL Defensive Player of the Year awards. It did not prevent him from setting the single-season sack record last year. So nobody should worry about that from a performance standpoint. The coaches aren't even worried about that at all from a performance standpoint. I think the place where you would question it some would be just in getting to know your teammates, getting to know your coaches, camaraderie, leadership, setting the tone, those kinds of things. Just showing up and saying, hey, I'm here because this matters that much to me to be here. He came to the Cavs game the other night. That's great. That's wonderful. He's a minority owner of the Cavs. But I think it would also show something to the coaches and the players if he could pop his head into voluntary minicamp.
I would agree with that. That would be nice. I get it. You get it. What if Andrew Berry's phone rings day before the draft and somebody just wants Miles like crazy? Would you think of moving him at his age? He's only 30. On the other hand, Mary Kay, we know he's got a lot of things going on in life. I don't know if he's a guy who's playing until he's 35. Would you start discussing a trade if somebody was interested?
Well, let me say that I still don't think that Andrew Berry is going to do that. I believe him. I'm taking him at his word when he says he's not trading Myles Garrett. Now, sometimes things are 100% true until something changes. And even Andrew has to admit that you can never say never. But heading into this draft, I don't really see a world in which it's going to happen, but I will qualify that and say, you can never say never. What if someone does get on that phone and make him an offer that he absolutely steadfastly cannot refuse? So he must have some intel that that's not going to happen like that, because he seems pretty sure that he's not going to be trading him. But once again, maybe someone will surprise even him.
Terrific preview piece of minicamp, Mary Kay. I enjoyed reading it very much. Can't wait to read your coverage on the camp on the Plain Dealer in Cleveland.com. Thank you.
Appreciate it as always, Mary Kay. Bring lights.
Thank you, guys.
It'll be a little chilly. Yeah. Thanks, Mary Kay. She joins us on the Make It Right Call Kyle Wright Hotline, but it's warming up.
It's going to be like three seasons in one day.
It's warming up.
It's going to be ridiculous.
It's going to be in
today.
The 70s by the time they're done.
Going to need like.
They'll be sweating.
Just going to need carry on luggage.
It's going to be great.
So will all of them. They'll all need carry on luggage to just change.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, wherever you get your shows.
Do we now actually have an idea what Paul DePodesta did with the Browns? Maybe. We'll explain that next on Baskin and Phelps. Coming up at noon, Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk is going to join us. We always love it when Mike joins us. Great website, great thoughts from Florio. He joins us at noon. I'm Jeff Phelps. Dan Menigan is in for Andy today. When we went to break, I said, do we finally know what Paul DePodesta did in Cleveland? Well, maybe. The Athletic has a story out written by Brittany Garali, and it says it's about Paul DePodesta. It's a profile on Paul. And the title of it is Paul DePodesta's Rockies Move. Moneyball at a midlife crisis or Colorado's best bet. So it's mainly just about Paul and his move from baseball to football, back to baseball, with a lot of stuff there thrown in. But Dano, there's some things in this article that give some really good insight into what was going on here with the Browns.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in the group of folks that has always thought, Paul DePodesta, he ruined everything, you probably want to pay attention here, because that may not be the case.
It's a very good piece. It's definitely worth a read. So Britt went and talked to a bunch of people inside of the Browns organization, as well as with the Rockies and all that stuff.
Former Browns employees who were there during this whole time.
Right. And talked to them about really what impact Paul DePodesta had, because frankly, some people saw him as the numbers boogeyman. you know, some people saw him as nothing more but a nerd who was derailing their franchise, who they'd love to cram the calculator down his throat and send him on his way.
A little harsh. A little harsh.
I think we've heard.
Nerd is also harsh.
I think we've heard
such about really things. Intelligent guy who's made a lot of money because of it.
I'm speaking for our fans. I'm a Paul DePodesta fan, of course, which is part of the reason why Andy always wants to yank my underwear over my head and run me up the flagpole.
Yeah, that he does. Can't argue with you on that one.
Uh-huh.
That he does.
Yeah. So, a couple of things in this piece really stood out. We'll read a couple pieces of it. Multiple sources said the hiring of John Dorsey as general manager undermined Paul DePodesta's emphasis on tanking and the draft.
So, in other words, they're saying he wanted to tank and get heavy in the draft.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The two clashed ideologically, and Dorsey brought in several win-now veterans to go 7-8-1 in a season during which head coach Hugh Jackson was fired. Some in Cleveland at the time wondered whether the Haslams, as hands-on as owners come, should stomach such a long rebuilding process.
Could. And that was the year 7-8-1 when buddy Greg Williams stepped in and took over and they won games.
Yep. So Paul DePodesta wanted this thing to go a little bit longer into the tank. And it seems like the Haslams, at least, again, according to Britt's piece, brought in John Dorsey to say, oh, no, we're done with this. We're going to try and win. We need to start pointing the ship in the right direction.
Interesting. She quoted a former Browns employee who worked with DePodesta. And these quotes are really good. These are good ones. This person said, DePodesta gets more hate than he should because it's easy to hate on a guy who flew in part-time and went to Harvard and was a baseball guy. And then here, I think, Dano, is what really is the telling part of this. The former Browns employee, he was never viewed as the primary decision-maker. His job was to integrate data and better decision models across the organization. In other words, how do we develop better systems for that? That was what Paul focused on a lot more than the roster. He was the process guy. Does that tell us something?
I think it tells us that a lot of people's idea that he was some kind of, you know, had his fingers in every single thing that was taking place inside of this organization and was running everything behind essentially, you know, as the Wizard of Oz was just probably not true.
No.
Or at least according to these people. And that fact that everybody turned him into some level of a villain, thinking that the, frankly, ineptitude of your football team was because of nerd guy, is just not true.
It's not nice use of the word nerd.
I am one.
It continues here.
I am nerd.
The former Browns employee talking about the original plan.
Yeah, I'm not sure the original plan ever got to see the light of day, a former Browns employee said. The big question, though, is would it have mattered? If you grade all decisions on plus minuses, I think their hit rate was better with Paul in it. The problem was you hit a bunch of dollar bets and missed on $1,000.
In other words, Deshaun Watson. Yeah. And sources telling Britt the decision to acquire Deshaun organizational, and this is from multiple sources telling her, organizational one, not DePodesta's alone, with the Haslams playing an integral role in deciding to guarantee the money, which, of course, they had to. They're the owners.
Correct. And we had heard that rumbled. We'd known that for a good period of time. Jason Lloyd had that. Many others had that too.
Last thought here from this former Browns exec. She points out, Britt does in her article, Browns had just two winning seasons under DePodesta, or when he was here, and he was here 9 years. So they only won twice. And he said, DePodesta, he didn't accomplish what he wanted to in the NFL. And Paul's quote was not even close. And then she says, but it's fair to question whether he was actually given a chance. The former Browns exec said this, his process, no one better. It was probably the most advanced in football. I think it failed because they didn't weigh it enough. In other words, the Haslams didn't buy in. Isn't that what that sounds like?
Or didn't go as deep as he, they probably
right,
should
didn't
have.
Didn't buy
doing
in completely.
Things. Yeah.
And listen to the guy they hired.
Right.
Now, this is about DePodesta. If the article is slanted in any which way, it's probably from people saying things about him that were positive. I don't know. But she found sources who said such things.
Correct.
Very interesting.
After he had been seen as the boogeyman for a long period of time. You know, that please ignore the man behind the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of the thing that I always question with this, because everybody blamed Paul DePodesta for the woes of this team. Everything that was good was John Dorsey's doing. Everything that was bad was Paul DePodesta's doing. That's kind of how everything started getting
weighed. That is how it went down.
In the eyes of the fan base. And I just always thought that was incorrect, because we never knew what this guy actually did. And now we're getting some kind of clarity that said he probably wasn't picking players. He probably wasn't the one who was sitting there saying, you have to do this, you must do this, you know, like, essentially, and I know you won't understand this reference in any way, shape, or form, and I apologize for it, but it's the
thanks.
Most apt
it's
one.
Always good to drop those on your co-host for the day.
It's the Lord of the Rings Two Towers thing. Where
no, you're
the,
right, I don't have a clue.
Told you. City of Rohan with the guy whispering in his ear the entire time after he's under the spell. That's literally how people made this sound. That Paul DePodesta was whispering.
Speaking of nerds.
In the, I told you I are one, and you didn't believe me.
I was being polite.
How dare you? I'm more offended that you tried to be polite.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
But no, like, more than anything, that this guy was here, nothing more than to put data in front of these guys and say, hey, this is the direction I think we should go. And then for, you know, essentially the organization to weigh that against what the football guys thought. And Jimmy Haslam, I think, saw it himself, and you'll get this reference, as, you know, essentially Captain Kirk with Spock and Bones McCoy on each side of him.
No, I don't really get that one either.
That's Star Trek. You hosted the show. These names had to come out of your mouth on accident, at least at one point.
At accident, yes.
Yes. The logical side going up against the more rational
there
human
you go.
Emotion side.
Ah, now we're talking.
Better?
It's the way
there.
To do it right there.
See, I'm here to help you.
Good
I'll
job.
Get you there.
Good job.
I'll get you there. But I think that's more what this was. He wasn't some evil boogeyman.
Well, I don't think there's any question. Paul DePodesta is a really smart guy. He's a smart sports guy. And I've always thought that if you were a smart baseball executive when it comes to stuff like analytics, if you could easily do the same stuff for basketball, you could do the same stuff for football. DePodesta actually played baseball and football mm-hmm. at Harvard. So, I mean, the guy had a little bit of background in the games. But I just think that's a very interesting article with some very interesting behind-the-scenes stuff that we really didn't know very much about.
No, and I think some of that is, the once again, the fault of the Browns for not saying, this is what this guy does.
Yeah.
If you would define...
They kind of hung him out to dry.
Exactly. If they would define his role a little bit better, we probably wouldn't have these thoughts when it's come to Paul DePodesta. But of course, you know, why communicate? Like, that's... I'm sorry to say it that way, but it's the truth of it. Like anytime, I'll never forget, there was a draft show where they had Paul DePodesta on. And it was a really good interview talking about how Paul DePodesta looked at all sorts of things. And this draft show had to have been like 4 years ago, 5 years ago, somewhere in between there. And the Browns Radio Network, that is. And it was very, very intelligent. It was really like he was really relatable in between everything that was going on there. And what he was saying made a boatload of sense of how to develop and build a football team. And everyone then looked at him and went, you know, oh, yeah, numbers boy, go away, go over yeah. there. You know, don't you, can't you use your calculator in the dark?
And could he? You know, that's the big question. Could
exactly.
He? The, I just wonder now, because DePodesta's gone, I wonder if his leaving was basically on his own, or if he thought or was told, you know, if something comes around that you're interested in. So I didn't see that in the piece anywhere.
No, I did not see that either.
And so I wonder if that was, you know, if it was suggested to him that he look for other opportunities, or if he just decided the time was now.
In the piece itself, it sounded like the opportunity was brought to him and he decided to pounce on it. Now, no idea as to if he just decided, I've taken this thing as far as I can and it's time for a new challenge to figure out the altitude of Colorado and build a winning team there, or if it was, hey, I don't want to tell you what to do, but you maybe want to start updating that resume.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I don't know which direction any of that was. Where are you on Paul DePodesta? What are your thoughts on just the legacy of Paul DePodesta?
I think he's a really obviously he's a really smart guy. I mean, it'd be stupid to say anything else on my part, your part, anybody's part. And the guy knows sports. Because we never knew exactly what role he was playing, it's really hard to put any succinct thought on what his legacy should be here. If you read the piece, it seems incomplete. And as he said, I didn't not even close to what he wanted to accomplish here. Well, was that because of him? Or was that because the Haslams wouldn't go all in on him? You know, that's what I wonder.
That's the fascinating part.
Yeah. Was he here? Did he have thoughts? Did he tell them what he thought and how to do it? And they didn't go in completely? If so, folks, that's 9 years you flushed down the commode, is it not? 216-474-0092. Love your thoughts on the story and the thoughts about Paul DePodesta. Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk coming up at noon. It's Baskin and Phelps with Menigan in for Andy. We were just talking about a piece written by The Athletic's Brittany Grawley, and Dan being the incredible producer that he is. By the time we ended the last segment and started this one, she's going to be with us on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be interesting.
It'll be a good conversation.
But her point is basically in part of this story that she's written, and it's really good, that DePodesta was here to do processes, not pick players, and kind of help.
Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one. So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast.
Reality Gaze, let's love.
Reform the thinking of the organization, and maybe it wasn't bought into completely. Which means if you bring in a deep thinker to make, deep thinking thoughts and create processes to help your team win, and you don't follow them, then what the hey?
Well, especially when you bring someone in to do a, I don't know the best way to put any of this stuff, to do something that is going to be more based in analytics and numbers and all of that kind of stuff versus somebody who is more used to running things by what their eyeballs tell them and their guts and all of that kind of thing. And
there's a lot to be said for both.
Oh, heck yeah. The thing that's so funny to me, how these two sides always war with each other, is both are built on the same exact thing, which is prior data and prior experiences.
Mm-hmm.
That's how both of these things are built. The models are built off of success of previous data. Your opinion is built off of previous data that you've had in life and how you evaluate people. They're both built on the same exact thing. And yet both sides, for some reason, war and hate each other.
Might be one of the heaviest things you've ever said on this show.
It's the truth. It's why it's always made my head hurt, why you can't live in this world of both things, of being able to look at numbers and analytics and use those to base off of what your eyes are telling you and everything else, because A works with B every single time in life. We don't do the things that we do unless we have experience to back up why we're doing them.
Coming up a little later on here on The Fan, probably after our show, well, definitely for the quarterbacks, Shedeur Sanders mm-hmm. and Dylan Gabriel are going to speak. Todd Monken expected to speak today as well, probably after our show, so it'll be on with the afternoon guys. I love looking at the Browns rumor du jour.
Uh-oh.
This one from Adam Schefter, and about the Browns bringing in a young veteran quarterback. Now it's a young veteran quarterback. Remember in the past it was external veteran options, and we all thought that might mean a 5 to 10 year guy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe it doesn't. Adam Schefter of ESPN listing Anthony Richardson.
Are you paying these guys?
I would love to get him in here and just see if Todd Monken can turn him into anything.
I'm partially wondering if you're like either getting checks from him or
Anthony Richardson. Will Levis.
I don't trust the man who puts mayonnaise in his coffee.
Tennessee.
I can't trust the man who puts mayonnaise in his coffee.
Back up to Cam Ward. His future there is non-existent. And Spencer Rattler, who is in New Orleans, and now Tyler Shuck is clearly their guy.
If the answer to your question is Spencer Rattler,
Will Levis or Anthony Richardson?
mostly Spencer Rattler.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that.
You know what? Maybe I'd put Will Levis in there, too.
I don't know.
The answer to your question is Will Levis and Spencer Rattler, I really hope your question is, how do I make sure I play a style of football that is absolutely silly to watch and will throw some interceptions that will make your head totally spin as we set ourselves up for a quarterback of the future? Especially Will Levis. Will Levis threw some of... I would just laugh at Will Levis because he would do things that made my head
hurt. That's not nice.
What?
Don't laugh at Will Levis.
Do you want to pull up the interception reels of Will Levis as he's trying to like throw balls behind his back to receivers that get intercepted? Some of the things that
You'll have that.
For every awesome Will Levis throw, there were two Will Levis throws that were like, oh my word. Oh, what are you doing?
You know, I am a big believer in you can't bury the career of a young person because they can get better and everything else. Tennessee clearly decided that Will Levis wasn't going to be their guy because they had the chance to draft Cam Ward and they did.
In the same, yeah.
If they didn't have the chance to draft Cam Ward, would Will Levis have received another chance? His last year in Tennessee, he threw for just over 2,000 yards, started 12 games. 13 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. I don't think he's anybody's answer to who's your starting quarterback.
And he puts mayonnaise in his coffee.
Yeah, since I drink limited coffee, it doesn't really matter to me. But the mayonnaise in the coffee doesn't sound like something it makes you want to try it almost.
No. Oh, God, no.
Would that be like Miracle Whip? Or would that be like, you know, Duke's mayonnaise?
I believe he's a Southern boy, so my guess would be Duke's mayonnaise.
Yeah, I would guess
Guess would be like actual full-blown mayonnaise.
See, we've seen too many quarterbacks around the NFL, Dan, who get buried when they're young, and then they've been unburied and played fairly well. And that's been a more recent phenomenon, I think.
Know.
Sam Darnold, Malik Willis, okay, who was also in Tennessee.
Well, we'll see what this looks like.
And Malik has had very few games. I mean, there's a very, very small sample size there, but he looked really good in Green Bay. But in Tennessee, he was, you know, out. And he was a third-round pick. So, you know, keep going.
I never thought Geno Smith or Sam Darnold put his head on a baseball bat and spun 40 times and then threw a football.
These are young guys you don't know.
There are times I watched Will Levis play quarterback for the Titans and thought that he put his head on a baseball bat, spun 40 times, and then threw.
Will will be 27 in June. Anyhow, that's what Schefter says. On the Browns' radar might be Anthony Richardson, Will Levis, Spencer Rattler.
I think if I had to pick, I would probably go Rattler, Richardson, Levis.
You'd go Rattler first?
I think so.
I'd go Richardson, Levis, and Spencer.
At least Rattler has had a modicum of success in the league.
But here's what I'm looking for. I don't know what you're looking for here. What I'm looking for is this. Is there a guy they could bring in who Todd Monken might actually be able to coach up to being your starting quarterback for a number of years to come where you're not thinking, good Lord, we got to get a different quarterback? I wonder if Anthony Richardson could be that guy. I think just going on draft status alone, Richardson would be at the top of my list. And then Levis was a second-round pick, and Rattler was a fifth-round pick. I'm not just looking for some guy, hey, this is our third quarterback. That doesn't do me any good. We have those guys.
What?
We have Dylan Gabriel. We have Shedeur Sanders. We have guys who might end up being your depth quarterbacks. So if I'm going to bring in anybody... Well, let me take that back. If I'm the Browns and I'm going to bring in anybody, they could bring in somebody just to be the camp arm.
Right.
And that guy could fall into a second string or third string or get traded role because they decide they're high on Shedeur or Dylan or Deshaun. If I'm the Browns, I'm taking a shot that Todd Monken might be able to discover something in Will Levis that the Titans coaching staff couldn't, or he can uncover the great natural gifts that Anthony Richardson has and make them work on the football field. So I would roll the dice in a big way because you already have three guys who make you go, eh.
But I've spent an entire 18-month cycle hearing about this mystical four-letter word, reps. that has been beaten again and again.
Not out of me. I think it's one of the most overrated things in this entire thing.
And so to bring in another one as we go through this 18-month cycle of hearing about this mystical word called reps, again and again and again, you want to cloud that more? The problem I have with Anthony Richardson is that I don't think he's a finished product in any way. I think he needs to go somewhere.
But that's the point.
But I think he needs to go somewhere where someone is going to go, you're going to come sit down over here, and we're going to teach you football. And we're going to teach you how to read a defense, and we're going to teach you progressions, and we're going to teach you all of the things that you didn't learn under Billy Napier at Florida. And that's fine. We understand that. We understand that you were overdrafted from where you were. You need to sit down, and you need to learn. And then maybe at the end of the season.
Again, that's the point.
But that won't happen here.
Why not?
Because where in the past of the Cleveland Browns has it happened that they have brought in a quarterback that they have allowed to sit for an extended period of time?
If you completely live in history,
is Shador.
If you're going to completely live in history, I think that's problematic, especially when you have a new head coach.
And what are the marching orders of said head coach?
That's a good question.
Because if that's the case, if the marching orders of the head coach are, hey, by hook or by crook, find the quarterback of the future, then your idea makes sense. Let's bring in Anthony Richardson. We'll sit him down for a while. We'll teach him football. We'll teach him how to read a defense. We'll teach him coverages. We'll teach him all the things.
He might know all that stuff.
From the guy that I watched in Indianapolis, that's a question mark. Not that I am some kind of phenomenal football mind or anything else like that, but it
seems... Nice job there, Don Strzok.
It seems like he made a lot of money as a backup quarterback.
Right, he did.
And was the only tan man when he rolled into town for that game.
Leaving the golf course as a host at Doral.
But he just, like, watching him looked like a guy who, again, was so talented but just didn't know how to link the brain to the talent. To use his eyes to see what was on the field, to be able to use his talent to succeed. It wasn't there. He needs to learn those things. And that's fine.
And he doesn't turn 24 until May 22nd.
But if you want to do that and you want to quote-unquote redshirt him, that's you need to do it that way. It can't just be, well, okay, the other quarterback got hurt. Go get him.
But then it gets back to this.
Well, he's not playing well. Okay, go get this guy. Okay, he's not playing well. We'll bench him and get Dylan Gabriel. Okay, Dylan Gabriel's not playing well. We'll bench him and put it to John Watt. Like, it can't be that.
But does it go back to this? Are you trying to win games and develop a quarterback this year, or are you waiting till 2027? If you were to bring in Will Levis or Anthony Richardson and try to develop them and they became pretty good, are you still looking for a quarterback in 2027? Or do you not even want to bother and lose as many games as you can to enhance your draft position? See, I can't imagine them telling Todd Monken that.
I think I'm just
can
so
you
tired.
Imagine Todd Monken? Wait a minute. You'd like me to intentionally not be as good as we can be so we can improve the draft status? Am I guaranteed of being? I'm not. That's a tough spot to put your coach in.
I think I'm just so tired of the flail, Jeff. I just wish they had a direction and followed it instead of flailing.
Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk has Brown's thoughts. He has a mock draft out. As Mike said, why put out a mock draft? Well, when in Rome. So he did. We'll talk to Florio next on Baskin and Phelps.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.